ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम अज्ञान्तिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथांवितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानो श्रुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वंच कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामो हरे रामो राम रामो हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। वेरी हैप्पी टू बी अमिडस्ट ऑल ऑफ यू ऑल हियर टुडे। वी लाइक टू वेलकम ऑल ऑफ यू ऑल फॉर दिस संडे फीस्ट प्रोग्राम। सो इट गिव्स मी ग्रेट जॉय टू see many of our young boys and girls from Gopal Garden School organizing today's Sunday Feast program. For me personally, it's actually a great joyful occasion, because many of them I have taught them when they were kids. Gopika, who was just introducing me, I've seen her when she was a baby, literally. And it's such a joy to see her stand up like our father and speak on a mic here in Radha Govinda temple. So the theme that all of them have chosen is passing on the legacy. And if you have seen the drama, the whole focus was on how the father is trying to pass on the culture to the son and the traditional heritage to the younger generation. So our leadership here in Radha Govinda temple is trying to encourage the younger devotees to take up responsibilities and take up the mission of Srila Prabhupada ahead. Interestingly, in our scriptures also we find this mood very much prevalent. In the Ramayana we find Hanumanji, who was encouraged by Jambavan to go ahead and cross the ocean. So Hanuman was young and Jambavan was very old at that time. So Jambavan, he told Hanuman that in my younger days I did so much, and he gave so many examples. And then he reminded Hanuman of his powers and he told him, now you go ahead and do. When you become older, the best way to serve is by giving advice, speaking, you know. And that's what Jambavan did. Inspired Hanuman with his advice, and Hanuman became the hero of the Ramayana. And then we find in the Mahabharata that Hanuman was old and the Pandavas were young. So Hanuman inspired Bhima to be the hero of the Mahabharata. And what did Hanuman do in the Mahabharata war? He was sitting on top of Arjun's flag. And the only contribution of Hanuman in the war was when Bhima would shout, Hanuman would shout along with him. Again, giving vocal contribution, basically. So, and interestingly, when the Pandavas became older, at the exact right time, they handed over the kingdom to Parikshit. And they walked away, you know. So the whole idea of passing the legacy is something that our scriptures always recommend. Unfortunately, in today's time and age where the political scenario is very funny because people don't just give up the position at all. No matter how old people are, they just don't want to let go. In that scenario, this whole concept of passing on the legacy that is introduced by Radha Gopinath Temple is very, very apt and very pertinent. So today, for today's Sunday Feast lecture, I'll be speaking on a very interesting concept from our scriptures. I'm specifically going to focus on symbolism in the Ramayana. So all of us have heard Ramayana's story many, many times in our lives. But I'm going to focus on a very different angle of the Ramayana, which probably you may not have thought about and you may not have heard about. So this is all about how different symbols or different episodes that happen in the Ramayana symbolically represent something else. Symbolically represent something in our own lives. And that's the whole way in which we will analyze the entire Ramayana today. So the itihas or the histories, the Ramayana Mahabharata, they're written very poetically, they're written very mystically, but also there is a great amount of symbolism in our scriptures. Starting with just names, the word Rama, it means the one who revels within himself, who finds pleasure within. The word Dasharatha, it means, Rath means chariot and Dash means 10. So Dasharatha's chariot could move in 10 directions. There is one way to understand the name. But Dasharatha also means the one who controls his 10 senses. For a person who controls his 10 senses, the mind is very quiet. The mind is very peaceful. Ayodhya means a place where there is no conflict. Why is Ayodhya a place where there is no conflict? Because the king who rules Ayodhya is Dasharatha, one whose 10 senses are under control and whose mind is very peaceful. So, for a person who has a peaceful mind, to such a person, Ram is born. So that means for a person who has a peaceful mind, to such a person can give birth to God in his life. So, essentially, if you study the other side, the flip side of the Ramayana, Ravana, he is also called as Dashamukha. So Dasharatha means the one whose 10 senses are under control. And Ravana means, Dashamukha means the one whose 10 senses are out of control. You know? So Dasharatha is inside and Dashamukha is outside. You know? Therefore Ravana's head has come out. You know? So Ravana left Sita in Ashok Vatika. Ashok Vatika is a place where there is no sorrow. But why, how did Sita live in Ashok Vatika? Sita had turned her mind inwards towards Lord Ram. And because Sita had turned her mind inwards, she was peaceful. She was not disturbed even in the middle of Asuric forces. So like that, if you just study every aspect of the Ramayana, like for example this whole episode of Sugriv and Vali, we know the story of how Vali had this power of getting half the strength of his enemy. Now, what is the meaning of getting half the strength of the enemy? Essentially, when you are in front of a temptation, like for example, if somebody has great temptation for sweets. So when you are in front of the sweet becomes double strong and your power to resist becomes half. That's the whole idea of how Wali, you know, signifies, you know, his strength becomes double and your strength becomes half, you know. So you cannot kill Wali from front. You shoot him from behind. You shoot him from hiding. That means when you go in front of your temptations, you can't deal with them. You deal with the temptation from side, from somewhere else. If you come in front of the temptations, you will lose half your strength, you know. So these are the ways in which we can actually analyze the Ramayana in very interesting ways. So in the Ramcharitramanas, there is this whole story of Lord Shiva coming down to Dandakaranya from Kailash. Shiva and Sati, they come down to meet Agastya Muni, to hear Ram Katha. Now, Shiva himself is a great acharya, great you know, devotee of the Lord, is a great saintly person. He knows Ramkatha very well. So why does he have to come to somebody else to hear Ramkatha? So Shiva was feeling that if Ram is incarnated and he has appeared in Dandakaranya to do his leelas, at least I should go to Dandakaranya to hear his leelas. So Shiva comes down all the way, and interestingly, when the Ram Leela is going on, Shiva comes to Dandakaranya to hear from Agastya. He doesn't go and participate in the Ram Leela. He doesn't go to meet Lord Ram. The reason is because it's not that Shiva doesn't know Ram. They know each other very well. But the reason Lord Shiva doesn't go to meet Lord Ram is because Shiva knows Ram is doing a drama. It's a Leela going on, pastime going on. It's a drama going on basically. So suppose your friend is acting on the stage and he's doing a drama, like we were having a drama just now here, you know. And suppose somebody in the audience says, "Arey, he's my friend, let me go and meet him on the stage," you know. You can't do that, you know. So let the drama go on the stage, you sit quietly till the drama is over. Then after the drama is over, you can meet your friend, you know. So Lord Shiva, if he enters into the drama of Lord Ram and he goes to meet him, it is actually going to spoil the whole drama, you know. So Lord Shiva says, "I'll not enter the drama, I'll just leave from outside." But with Shiva, Sati also comes down, and they come to Agastya's house. And sage Agastya, when he sees Shiva and Sati, he is highly impressed. He offers respects to them. He worships them literally. So Shiva is very disturbed by the fact that Agastya is worshipping them, because generally a listener, somebody who comes to listen to Ramkatha or Krishna Katha, worships the speaker. Here, the speaker is worshipping the listener. So Shiva is very disturbed by why he is worshipping me. But on the other hand, Sati, she thinks exactly opposite. Sati is a daughter of Daksha, and Daksha represents intelligence, because he is born of Lord Brahma. Brahma is intelligence personified, and therefore Daksha, who is the son of Brahma, he is also intelligence personified, and Sati, who is the daughter of Daksha, is also intelligence personified. So Sati is analyzing everything from the intelligent point of view. So she is thinking, generally when somebody worships somebody else, the person who worships is junior and the person who is worshipped is senior. So when Agastya worships Shiva and Sati, Sati starts using an intelligence thinking that Agastya is junior to me. So when Shiva is worshipped by Agastya, Shiva pays obeisances to Agastya also, because he understands Agastya is doing it at one level, but I also should do it at another level, because he is also equally worshipable. But Sati doesn't worship Agastya. She just kind of stays straight. So when human beings analyze events, analyze one another, analyze each other, analyze other people, there's always different perspectives of analyzing. Like, I'm going to tell you a story from the scriptures. This is a very simple story. I'll just tell it in brief, and then we will see different perspectives of seeing the same story. This is a story of Garuda's mother, whose name is Vinita. So she had a bet with Kadru, Garuda's aunt. So both were like co-wives, and they had a bet with one another. So the bet was, what is the color of Indra's horse tail? Indra had a horse whose name was Uchchishrava, and the bet was, what is the color of the tail of the horse? So Kadru said the tail is black in color, and Vinita said, how can a white horse have a black tail? So his tail is white in color. So they had a bet, and the wager was that whoever loses the bet will become servant of the other person for life. Can you imagine difficulty of gambling, you know? So they were so stuck on each other's opinions, they had a bet and they agreed to wager. And then Vinita, she went to see the horse, and she saw the horse was having a black tail. But what Kadru did actually was that she made her children, the snakes, go and stick to the tail of the horse and camouflage the tail. The white tail looked black because all the snakes were hanging on the tail, basically. So she cheated. But Vinita didn't observe it, and she agreed, and she became a slave for life for Kadru. I'm just stopping the story, but we'll look at the perspectives of seeing the same story. So now I'm comparing this story with the story of the Ramayana. So if you see this story from different angles, in fact in the Ramayana, the same story is referred many, many times to different people for different occasions. Ram gives a story of the example of this story only for some other reason. Lakshman gives example of this story only for some other reason. You know, then Shatrughna gives a reference of this story only for some other reason. That means one story, according to who you are, according to what situation you are in, you can see different angles from it. You know. That's how our scriptures are. That's how our stories of our scriptures are. So from Ram's perspective, Vinita made one mistake. So Kadru represents bad intelligence. And what does bad intelligence do? Bad intelligence tries to show up white as black. White money as black money. You know. White lies as black lies. You know. So the black white represents knowledge and black represents ignorance. White represents truth and black represents lies. So Kadru was very expert. She had bad intelligence, so she could change what is truth to a lie, basically. So from Rama's perspective, Vinita made a mistake of believing Kadru without verifying facts. So there are many people, instead of relying on scriptural guidance, they rely on their own senses and they rely on other people's opinions. Today we find in the so many people send WhatsApp messages and all wrong things. Especially when Gita Jayanti is coming, all these messages about what Gita is comes, you know. So suddenly, you know, everybody is talking about Bhagavad Gita, you know. And all wrong things, 90% of the things are all wrong. Or for example, there are so many people today who are misrepresenting what the scriptures actually mean. And many people, just because they read Duryodhan, you know, names of Krishna, Arjuna and all that, they just believe anything that is written. So from Ram's perspective, it was Vinita's fault because she didn't she only relied on her senses. She didn't take any guidance from anybody superior. From Bharat's perspective, the same story. Bharat quotes this story to show that Kadru was so cunning that she used her sons for a wrong purpose. So her sons should not have listened to her. So Bharat is telling from his own perspective, because his mother Kaikeyi, she is using him to achieve a particular goal. So Bharat is saying, I am not going to be like Kadru's sons who quietly follows what a mother says. If something is wrong, it's wrong. I'll point it out. So this is Bharat's perspective of the same story. From Shatrughna's perspective, the story is very seen differently. If Vinita had not unnecessarily got into an argument, all these problems would not have happened only. So from Shatrughna's perspective, in life it is best to stay quiet. So Shatrughna, all his life in the Ramayana, he stays quiet only. So in one sense, Shatrughna is not part of the whole Leela of Ram Leela. He is not there anywhere in picture. You don't find too many dialogues with Shatrughna, because this was his philosophy of life. Keep quiet. Less trouble will be there in life, you know. So from Lakshman's perspective, because of Kadru, all the snakes had to suffer, except one person, one snake, which was Sheshnag. All the snakes suffered except Sheshnag. Garud could not harm Sheshnag because Sheshnag never left the side of God. Sheshnag was always next to the Supreme Lord, therefore Garud could not harm Sheshnag. So from Lakshman's perspective, for me, for Lakshman, his whole goal of life was, no matter what happens, I will not leave Ram. I'll be with Ram only. You know? So no harm can happen to me. So from Mantra's perspective, Mantra also told the same story to Kaikeyi. And from her perspective, the whole story was told for one purpose. You should always be alert of your stepwife, of your co-wife. That's all. That is the lesson Mantra drew from the whole story. Vinita and Kadru, they were wives of Kashyapa. So whoever has a co-wife, that person should be very alert. That is what the whole story meant for Mantra. And so which means, one event can mean so many things to so many people according to what perspective you see the event from. So essentially, when we look at the whole Ram Leela in this point of view, there is so much to learn. So when Sati, she went to test Lord Ram, and you know, she saw Agastya and she felt he's bowing down to me, so I don't have to respect him. And then she realized that Ram Leela that they are talking about, who is this Ram? She said, let me go and test who this person is first, to really find out if he is really God or not. They seem to be discussing Ram Katha, but let me go and see if he is really God. How can God be wandering around in the forest crying like this for his lost wife? And Sati goes and she stands in front of Ram. As soon as Ram sees Sati, he bows down and folds his hand. So the whole idea of Ram folding hands in front of Sati was that, I am bowing down to you because Sati came out of curiosity to test Ram. So he was thinking, if Sati has come as an examiner and I am the candidate, I should be respectful to the examiner. You know, so somebody who is being tested is always respectful to somebody who has come to test, right? So Ram respects Sati, and instantly she realizes that she made a big mistake, you know, because Ram recognizes this is not Sita, this is Sati, because Sati comes disguised as Sita, you know. From that point onwards, Lord Shiva disconnects from Sati, literally. He doesn't associate with Sati at all. And then after that follows the whole Sati immolates herself with Daksha Yajna, and then eventually she comes as Parvati. And that time Shiva reunites with Parvati. Why Shiva leaves Sati? Because the whole angle has changed now. Sati took Sita's form. And Sita is somebody that Shiva worships. From, you know, Shiva's point of view, Sita is mother. So as soon as Sati took Sita's form, Shiva said, now I can't look at her as a wife. So he kind of disconnects from her, you know. So the scriptures, if you analyze them from all these different types of angles, there is so much depth in them. Most scriptures in the world, except the Vedic scriptures, are having one direction only, or only one layer. But the Vedic scriptures have so many layers. And unless you have somebody who can give you guidance and understanding of the depths of all the layers, the story just remains superficial to us. The story remains just very, very external to us. Like for example, the story of Hanumanji eating the sun, you know, thinking it is a fruit. So if you just analyze that story from the point of view of a deeper analysis, a deeper symbolic understanding of it, there is some fascinating things to understand. So now, if you look at Hanuman, Hanuman is the avatar of Lord Shiva. Now, he is not an ordinary person. So, can Hanuman make the mistake of considering the sun to be a fruit? I mean, any child, or rather any intelligent person, understands the difference between sun and fruit. Can Hanuman be so ignorant that when he looks at the sun, he considers it a fruit and jumps to eat it? So, there is a deeper understanding of this element in the Ramayana. So when Hanumanji reaches Ashok Vatika, when he meets Mother Sita, he tells her, I am very, very hungry. Now, he is asking her, can I eat all the fruits that are hanging on the trees over here? So does it mean that Hanumanji, all the time that he jumped across the ocean and all that, you know, he didn't get anything to eat, therefore he is so hungry over here, you know, suddenly, you know. So, why does Hanuman talk about so much hunger when it comes to Mother Sita? So, in the Ramayana, there is a lot of discussion on hunger. Many people are hungry in the Ramayana, you know. When Hanuman crosses the ocean, there is Surasa who is hungry. Then Simhika is hungry. Then after that, you find the monkeys that are there in the ocean, they are also hungry. Then Sampati the vulture, he is also hungry, you know. So, everybody seems to be hungry, you know. Kabanda is so hungry, you know. So what is the meaning of the hunger? And now Hanumanji is saying, I am hungry, you know. So Hanumanji's words points out to different types of hungers that exist in life. So hunger, generally people think it is only related to the belly, physical hunger for food. But there are different types of hungers that are all considered to be hungers only. So just like we need food for physical well-being, we also need food for mental well-being. And we also need food for intellectual well-being. So there is physical hunger, there is mental hunger, there is, which is what we call as emotional hunger, then there is intellectual hunger. So, when you are physically hungry, you eat food, then your physical hunger will get satisfied, basically. But when there is hunger for dignity, when there is hunger for respect, we are looking at mental hunger, emotional hunger. And then there is hunger for knowledge, hunger for deeper understanding of life. That is intellectual hunger. So, if somebody is physically hungry, it's considered to have a fit body. Who's sick, somebody who's sick, doesn't feel appetite at all, doesn't feel hunger at all. But for somebody who is hungry physically, that means he's healthy. Similarly, one should have mental hunger also. That means one should have hunger for certain amount of self-respect. There are people who are highly shameless. Completely shameless. So now such people don't have this mental hunger or emotional hunger at all, you know. So for them, you give them bad words, you give them anything, nothing matters, you know. They're like completely shameless, basically. Then there is intellectual hunger, which means that quest for knowledge, quest for understanding the higher truths of life. There are many people who may physically be hungry, that means their body is fit. There are many people who may be emotionally hungry, that means they are mentally fit. But if you don't have intellectual hunger, that means seeking knowledge of higher things in life, that means you are still unhealthy. Your health is not complete, basically. So these three types of hunger have to be balanced. So, food for mental hunger is not only entertainment, but it has to be entertainment that is healthy. Just like any wrong type of food that you eat, it's not that just because you're hungry you eat anything, you know. You have to eat the right type of food for you to be healthy for a longer period of time. It's not just about stuffing yourself. If a pig wants to eat, the pig doesn't think, you know, who has cooked it, who has, you know, passed it or whatever. You know, the pig is just eating whatever comes, you know. But that's not how a human being has to think. He has to discriminate what food is good and what food is bad. Similarly, if there is intellectual hunger, there has to be an understanding of where the truth is coming from. And therefore, Hanumanji's hunger, jumping to the sun, is hunger of the intelligence. He jumps to catch the sun because the sun represents light and sun represents knowledge. And that is the source which enlightens a person. So Hanumanji jumped towards the sun because he wanted to gain knowledge. That's what the sun represents, basically. So he was hungry, but his hunger was not a physical hunger. His hunger was not just an ordinary hunger. His hunger was hunger for knowing the higher truths of life. And this hunger helped Hanuman take such a big leap. Sun was very, very far. And there were many fruits below. I mean, it's not that there were no fruits hanging in Kishkindha trees, you know. But Hanumanji jumped so high because his quest for knowledge was so high. His quest for intellectual hunger was so high. And therefore, in the Ramayana, we find many hungers, as I said. Sampati, when he sees the monkeys, he also feels very hungry. So, when Surasa looks at Hanumanji, she also feels hungry. And when Simika sees Hanumanji, she also feels hungry. They all try to eat Hanumanji up. So, essentially, it means that everybody is hungry, but different people have different types of hungers. Some people are living life only to satisfy physical hungers. Some people are living life to satisfy mental hungers. And some people are living life to satisfy their intellectual hungers. And therefore, when we look at all these hungers, you know, it just opens your eyes to seeing the Ramayana from a different perspective. In the Ramayana, we find Rahu also was hungry. He also came to eat the sun. And Hanumanji also came to eat the sun. Now, can we say that Rahu's hunger was same as Hanumanji's hunger? Not at all. So, though Rahu was coming to eat the sun, what was Rahu's whole mood? Rahu was anti-Surya. He was against the sun, actually. And that is why Hanumanji did not want Rahu to swallow the sun. Because Rahu represents darkness, the black side of life. And the sun represents light, knowledge. So when Rahu swallows the sun, what happens is knowledge gets covered. The earth, the people in this world do not have access to knowledge. So Rahu like people, they come and cover the sun, which is like the scriptures. and by giving their own interpretations, by giving their own understanding, by giving their own wrong interpretation of the scriptures. And therefore Hanumanji eats the sun before Rahu eats the sun. That means Hanumanji is trying to preserve knowledge and Rahu is trying to destroy knowledge. So Hanumanji, like people, they are proactive. Before Rahu eats, he ate. So Hanumanji didn't eat the sun because he was hungry for that fruit. He ate the sun because he was hungry for knowledge. And second, he wanted to preserve the knowledge for future. And the third reason why Hanumanji ate the sun was because he knew that Ram is going to be born in the Solar dynasty in future. So if Ram is going to be born in the Solar dynasty in future and the sun is eaten by Rahu, it's a shame for the Solar dynasty. He said, my duty to preserve the sun, not allow the sun to be eaten by Rahu. And that's another reason why Hanumanji ate up the sun. In the Ramayana, we find this story of Ahalya, where Ram delivers Ahalya by touching his feet on the stone, and immediately Ahalya comes back to life. So Lakshman, there's a discussion between Lakshman and Lord Ram, where, of course, this is not in the Valmiki Ramayana, this is a folk tale connected to the Ramayana, but it's very interesting to see this from Lord Ram's perspective. Again, symbolism, Lakshman asks Ram if he felt anything negative about Ahalya when he stepped on her, or because she performed some wrong action, she performed some sin. So Lakshman is asking Ram, when you stepped on her, did you think even once that she did not deserve this? She did not deserve to be delivered. So Ram tells Lakshman, when I stepped on that stone, when I saw Ahalya, I felt Ahalya is exactly like me, in my situation only. So Ram was referring to the curse that he also got. So there is a story in the Puranas about how Lord Vishnu was cursed by Vrinda to become a stone, Shaligram Shila, So in one sense, Ahalya's situation of being a stone and Vishnu's situation of being a stone is very similar. Both were cursed to becoming stones. So, and interestingly, both were cursed for the same reason. So Vishnu was cursed by Vrinda because Vrinda was the wife of Jalandhar, and Vishnu, he kind of destroyed her Pativrata Dharma, and that's exactly what Indra did. And Ahalya was cursed by Gautam Rishi. So in one sense, so Ram was feeling that according to me, the world hates her for the one mistake that she made, but the same world worships me for the mistake that I made. So one stone is hated, one stone is looked down upon, and the other stone is worshipped. So Ram was saying, it's not right. Therefore when I saw her, I felt that she is like me only, and if I am worshipped, she should definitely be worshipped. If I am worshipped in spite of my mistake, she definitely needs to be worshipped in spite of her mistake. And that's how Ram saw the whole Ahalya Leela. Hanumanji in the Ramayana, the role of Hanumanji is that he is a link between Bhagavan and Bhakta. So anywhere where you find a devotee meeting Ram, you find Hanumanji is involved over there. Sugriv meeting Ram was due to Hanuman. Vibhishan meeting Ram was due to Hanuman. Many of these exalted people, their connection with Ram happened to be Hanuman, basically. The entire monkey army connecting with Ram is because of Hanuman. So, if Hanuman was not there, Sugriv would not have met Ram at all. Because Sugriv was scared of Ram. When he saw Ram for the first time, he started running away from Ram. He was very scared. So generally, people are God-fearing. You'll find very less people who are God-loving. So only people who are God-loving can bring a connection between God-fearing people and God. Hanumanji came in between Sugriv and Ram, and Hanumanji came in between Vibhishan and Ram. Vibhishan left his home and kingdom abruptly. He came, wanted to come and meet, be with Ram. But if Hanumanji had not given the right perspective of who Vibhishan is to Ram, Ram would have thought so many times before accepting Vibhishan. So, Sugriv, he had full faith in Hanumanji. Interestingly, between Sita and Sugriv, if you see, there is one small difference. Sita believed Ravan for one moment. So Ravan came dressed as a saintly person. And for one moment, Sita believed in Ravan. As a result, she was kidnapped. And Sugriv believed in Hanuman. Because Sugriv had faith in Hanuman, he was connected with Ram, basically. So, one needs to have some faith. But the faith has to be in the right person who has the right intention. When you have faith in the right person who has the right intention, that person can connect you with God. Even if you are God fearing, he can make you God loving. But if you have faith in the wrong person who has the wrong intention, then you will be separated from God for a long period of time. Sita was separated from Ram for 10 months because she had faith in the wrong person for a small amount of time who had the wrong intention. So when the question of faith comes, you have to have both faith and intelligence when it comes to connecting with God. But unfortunately, so God has given us both intelligence, buddhi, and faith, which is Vishwas. Why God has given us both intelligence and faith? I mean, when we are worshipping God, when we are trying to become Krishna conscious, sometimes we think that God should not have given us intelligence. Because the byproduct of intelligence is doubt. So when you have too much intelligence, you have too much doubt also, you know. So there are many people who are highly intelligent people, they just cannot take up devotion only. All the time doubt keeps coming. Why like this? Why like that? Why like this? So when you have too much intelligence, too much doubts come. And therefore you can't take up devotion. But only having faith and not having intelligence is not also the right way of taking up spiritual life. So therefore, you have to have both faith and intelligence. You have to use faith, you have to use intelligence in matters of dealing with this world. In dealing with the world and in dealing with worldly people, you need to use intelligence. And in the matter of dealing with God and the devotees, you need to have faith. But what we do is, in the matter of dealing with God, we use intelligence, and in the matter of dealing with the world, we use faith. Full faith in the world and full doubt about God. We have to do exactly the opposite. Use your intelligence to analyze the world and people in the world. And use your faith to have faith in God and develop your connection with God. And therefore, both are given to us. Sugriv, the only good qualification of Sugriv was that he had faith in a true saint. He had faith in the one whom you are supposed to have faith in. So that was the only qualification of Sugriv you see in the Ramayana. When Ram came, he tested him thoroughly, you know. Left, right, center, he tested Ram. Generally, God tests a devotee. But in Ramayana, devotee tests God, you know. So, God had to give proof that he is God to a devotee. That is the extent to which Sugriv tested him. But the only qualification Sugriv had was that he had faith on Hanuman's words. So, if you can have faith in the words of a saint, then the eyes of the saint, the sharp eyes of the saint, can help you see God. Sugriv did not recognize Ram. Sugriv did not recognize that Ram is God with his eyes. He had doubts when he saw Ram. But Hanuman helped Sugriv recognize Ram. And therefore, if you have faith in the words of a saintly person, then the words of a saintly person, through the eyes and vision of a saintly person, you can recognize who God is. With your own eyes, when you look at God, with your intelligence and with lack of faith, you will only see doubts. Because, can you imagine, Sugriv actually thought Ram was Vali's friend, Vali's ally. So that is the extent to which doubts can take place if you use only your intelligence and not have faith in saintly people. So when Hanuman brought Sugriv to Lord Ram, Hanuman, he created a fire. To establish the friendship between Ram and Sugriv, he lit a fire. And Ram and Sugriv went around the fire 7 times. They actually took Pharaohs. Can you imagine, you know, seal of friendship. You know, they actually went around keeping fire as a witness of their friendship. So interestingly, to light a fire, you need two things. You need wood and you need fire. And so essentially, both wood and fire represent the dharma of what friendship is. But from Ram's perspective, more important than wood and fire is air, vayu, which is what Hanumanji is. So if you want to light fire, when there is no oxygen at all, fire can't be lit. Because you need air to light fire. So vayu is represented by Hanumanji. That means it's not enough to just have wood and fire to seal a friendship with between God and his devotees, but you need the presence of a saintly person there. So the combination of Hanuman creating that fire represents that vayu tattva, or the presence of a saintly person over there, you know. And therefore, without the presence of Hanuman, there cannot be friendship between Sugriv and Ram. Hanumanji, though he is such an exalted devotee, he never considers himself to be exalted. He always considered himself to be a simple, a humble person. And that's because of the nature of what devotion is. For most other processes, whether it is yajna, dana, tapa, karma, and so many, all the processes, ashtanga, all the processes are extremely difficult. And bhakti is very simple. Because the basis of bhakti is kripa, mercy. So now, generally when you want to do something great, like for example, when you want to do tapa, you need to have some qualification. When you want to do some austerities, when you want to do some yajnas, when you want to do some, to do yajna, you have to have Brahman Diksha. And nowadays, where you get Brahman Diksha, you know. So, to do different things, you need different types of qualifications. To do Ashtanga Yoga, you need to have a fit body and mind. Now, where is the fit body and mind over here, you know. So, for everything in this world, you need to have some qualification, except for bhakti. Because, for doing bhakti, kripa is not with you. Kripa is with somebody else. So, what you need to do bhakti? So, the process of sadhana is what we look at sadhana bhakti is achieved by our own efforts. So when we do sadhana, we keep doing it by our own efforts. But bhakti is not just about doing sadhana. You need the mercy of the Lord also to actually reach the culmination of bhakti or reach the perfection of what bhakti is. So essentially, the purusharthas or the process of sadhana and the efforts that we do cannot reach us to God. They cannot by themselves reach us to God. But we still do that work because we have an ego that I need to do something. Right? Like in Ashtanga Yoga, suppose an Ashtanga Yogi sees God. He is convinced that I have put my effort and because of that I saw God. But if a bhakti yogi, he sees God by kripa, he is bewildered, you know, his ego needs satisfaction that I also did something. So that is why the whole process of sadhana bhakti is there, you know. You do 16 round japa, 4 related principles, and this and that, you know, yatra every year. So at the end of the whole lifetime of doing so much of effort, we are convinced that maine bhi kuch kiya hai. But actually, it's not by our effort that you achieve bhakti towards the Lord. It is only kripa that you achieve bhakti. But that whole process of effort is to give us satisfaction that I also did something. But the reality is that in bhakti, you don't do anything. You are convinced that it's not you who is doing it. It's a kripa of the Lord, it's a mercy of the devotees of the Lord who by which you are achieving perfection of your life. And that is what Hanumanji represents actually in the Ramayana. So in this whole process of the monkey army going to search for Sita, there are some very interesting symbolic lessons from this episode. So Angad and all the monkeys which were under him went to the southern direction. they were so enthusiastic when they went out to the south, because Sugriv chose the most powerful monkeys to go to the south. He chose the most powerful of the monkeys. You know, most of the other direction, the north, east and west direction, they had one leader. But in southern direction, there were almost 10-12 leaders. The reason he had such powerful people going to the south, Jambavan, Hanuman, Angad, so many other, Nala, Neela, so many other people who are the most powerful people are all in the south. Now, why do you need so many leaders in the south? Because the probability of getting Sita in the south is the most. Because Sugriv, he knew that Ravan's kingdom is in Lanka. But purposely he did not tell Ram before only where Ravan was. The reason was, reason why Sugriv didn't tell Ram before was because Sugriv was a doubtful devotee, you know, doubting devotee, you know, always doubting. So Sugriv, he thought, if I tell Ram where Sita is, now only, before killing Vali only, he'll go directly to where Sita is. Because Ram is not interested in Vali or Sugriv, he's interested in Sita, right? So Sugriv, first time when Ram asked him, do you know where Ravan stays? He said, I don't know. He actually knew. So purposely he didn't say. But when it came to sending the army, he sent the most powerful people to the south. And that time he says that Ravan kingdom is in Lanka, you know. So anyways, Angad and the whole monkey army was going to the south, enthusiastically looking for Sita. So they went on top of mountains, they searched in caves, they searched in forests, they searched high and low to look for Sita. This is the process of sadhana. The process of sadhana is lot of efforts. You put lot of efforts in finding Bhakti Devi. Sita represents Bhakti, basically. So to find Bhakti, you need to put lot of efforts from your side. Climbing mountains, you know, killing demons, which are the anarthas, you know, going through forests of confusions. So many things you have to do, so that you are trying to find Bhakti, Sita Devi, basically. So, many people try different things to conquer the demons. Some people attend satsang to conquer the demons. Some people attend, you know, different types of aarties and programs to attend the demon, to kill the demons. So all the efforts that we do is compared to the search of Sita by the monkey army. So initially they were so enthusiastic to find Sita, but after 30 days the enthusiasm went down. After 30 days they were exhausted, because they had made a mental plan of how they will find Sita. Because Sugriv had given all of them, all the four search parties, 30 days time. He told them, within 1 month, if you don't come back, I will kill all of y'all. So he had given a deadline to them, you know. So for them, mental calculation of finding Bhakti Devi, finding Sita, was 30 days. So now if you start with the thought that in 30 days I will find Bhakti, after 30 days you still don't find, you get depressed. That's generally what happens with sadhakas. Sadhakas start with a end in aim. And they start with a very interesting calculation of how fast they will progress in their spiritual lives, you know. 2 saal mein ye ho jayega, 4 saal mein diksha ho jayega, 5 saal mein, 6 saal mein second initiation ho jayega, 10 saal mein ye ho jayega. And then you go on and on making your calculations of what really means progress and what really means achieving your goal of bhakti, basically. So different people have different limits of what those number of hours of work are, number of, you know, days of efforts are. For some people, they get tired in 1 day. 1 day you do 16 rounds. He said, "Mere se nahi hoga, rakh do mala." You know, some people get tired after 4 days. Some people get tired after, you know, 4 years. Some people get tired after 10 years. 20 years ki baat to thaki jaate hai. Bola, bahut ho gaya. No, there is absolutely no sign that I am going to develop love for God after 20 years. I'm sorry, that's it. I can't do anymore. So according to the type of person you are, you get tired at a certain point. So these monkeys over here, they were tired after 1 month. And essentially, when the time of exhaustion comes, when you start getting tired, that's when you start doubting the scriptures. That's when you start doubting the process. That's when you start doubting the guidance, the direction that is given to you. So the monkeys start thinking, they are thirsty, they are lost, they were lost in the forest of doubts. Completely lost, you know, and they have no idea where Sita is and no idea what to do now. So, there are many sadhakas who enthusiastically begin the process, and when they don't reach the goal, they get completely bewildered. So Ram Katha is very much applicable in today's situation also. So it's not that what the monkeys did in Treta Yuga is not is something that we don't understand. We are also the same thing. Vanar Sena only, you know. All of us are trying to search for Sita, Bhakti Devi, you know. And different people are going in different directions. Somebody is going to east, somebody is going to west, somebody is going to north, somebody is going to south. At least those who are within the ISKCON society, Prabhupada is there to tell them, go to south. Udhar Bhakti Devi hai, you know. So baki log idhar udhar dhoond rahe hain, yahan pe nahi hai. Hai kya? So at least we are given direction. But as we are going on the direction, there is sometimes a very, very remote chance that we feel exhausted and we feel tired and we feel like giving up. And that is a time when Hanuman-like people step in. So during this whole search process of 1 month, Angad was leading and Hanuman was behind. So Hanuman, when enthusiasm is on, Hanuman said, why should I be in the front? Angad is enthusiastic, everybody is enthusiastic. So he said, I will follow everybody. So Hanuman was following. And now when everybody gets exhausted and tired, Hanuman comes in the front. That's the very interesting role a devotee plays in our lives. So when you are going in the right direction and when you are enthusiastic, the devotee just stands behind and sees you progressing. But the day your enthusiasm wanes, that day devotee comes back in the front and shows you more direction. So Hanuman, so everybody, all the monkeys were dying of thirst. They were dying of hunger. But Hanuman, he felt no thirst at all. Because Hanuman was nourishing himself with Ram Kripa, with the Lord's mercy. And while everybody was walking in the sun, exhausted, so much heat, so much suffering, Hanumanji was walking with the meditation. The interesting meditation that Hanumanji was having was that just before Hanuman left Lord Ram's association, you know, just the last thing that Ram did with Hanuman, the last interaction was, Ram kept his hand on Hanuman's head. So Hanuman was walking for the 1 month with this feeling that Ram's hand is on my head. So that feeling of Ram's hand being on his head was protecting him from the sun, was protecting him from all the heat, and he was actually feeling sheltered. He was actually feeling nourished. He was actually not feeling tired. But all the other monkeys, they carried no feeling of Ram's hand being on their head. And they were getting exhausted and they were getting tired totally, you know. So, when all the people were reaching, when they were in this complete exhausted spirit, that time they came across a cave. Essentially, in this whole process of bhakti, you can get a lot of things by your own efforts and by your own abilities. But to get kripa, the grace of the Lord, ability is not a criteria. For getting many things in life, ability may be the criteria. But for getting the grace of the Lord, ability is not the criteria. So when they entered the cave, so when they saw the cave was so dark. And interestingly, something very fascinating happened. Just when they were trying to enter the cave, some birds came flying out of the cave. And these birds are not ordinary birds. They were water birds. They were waterfowls, basically, you know. So they had some water droplets which sprinkled on these people's faces. So immediately everyone knew that there is water inside this cave, basically. So till this point of time, Angad was leading with great confidence. But when it came to time to enter the cave, which was dark, which you couldn't see, Angad said, I can't enter first. He sent Hanuman ahead. So Angad represents intelligence. Angad actually represents efforts, ability, our own ability, purusharth, what we call as, you know. So most people in this world who are focused on karma, my action, I will achieve result by my effort, they become like Angad at some point. Put so much effort, but no result. Then they go into depression, basically. That is when people like Hanuman come in front, who represents faith, avishwas. Cave is dark, with your ability and with your efforts, you can't go into a cave which is dark. You need to have faith to go into the cave which is dark. Hanumanji, he walked in fearlessly. When all the monkeys were thinking 10 times, should I go in, should I go in? Hanumanji walked in fearlessly. And all the monkeys were holding each other's tail, you know. First monkey holding Hanuman's tail, second monkey holding that fellow's tail, go on and on and on. So, only Hanuman had nothing to hold on to. Because he didn't have to hold on to anybody else. He had faith in God. And when somebody has faith in God, you don't have to hold on to somebody else to go ahead in life. Hanuman walked into a dark cave without holding on to anybody else. Because he had great faith in God. He had great Vishwas. So, there were two reasons why Angad didn't enter the cave. Otherwise he was fearless most of the times. But the reason he didn't enter the cave, this two reasons were. First reason was that all his problems in life started with cave only. Vali entered into that cave, that Mayavi demon was there, you know. And he didn't enter. He was standing outside a cave for almost a year, you know. And that's where all the problems of his life began, with a cave. So Angad said, I can't handle another cave now in my life. You know? I can't enter first. You know? And the second reason he didn't enter the cave was because he saw the birds coming out, but he couldn't see the water. So people like Angad, they cannot see Kripa which is invisible. Mercy of the Lord is not visible. You can't see mercy. I mean, Radha Gopinath is very merciful. Kidhar dikhta hai? Dikhta hai kya? Aisa mercy kidhar likha hai? Radha Gopinath ke haath mein mercy likha hai? You can't see mercy. It's invisible, basically. Kripa is invisible. And because people who have faith on themselves only, and their own abilities only, they can't see something that is invisible like Kripa. Because such people don't see what they don't trust. And generally, when there is something unseen, we tend to doubt that thing. So Hanuman, he was a very interesting personality compared to all other monkeys in the army of Sugriva. Hanuman, he would lead when he is asked to lead. He would follow when he is asked to follow. Sometimes he became very small. Sometimes he became very big. Sometimes he became very angry. And sometimes he was like a child crying. So Hanuman was a very flexible person. And there was a lot of variety in Hanumanji's character. I mean, why do you think Hanuman is a hero in everybody's lives? Hanuman is a hero because there is so much variety in him. Most of the monkeys, they were very fixed. Like all of us. Most human beings are not flexible. They are rigid. Somebody who is a Brahmana, he thinks himself to be great, always looks down upon others. Somebody who is a Kshatriya, he, you know, always looks to control others. So different people have different abilities and they are very fixed about their abilities and they're not flexible, basically. So generally people limit their own abilities, limit themselves. And when you have a certain belief system about who you are, what type of person you are, what you can do and what you can't do, it's like building a wall around yourself. And you imprison yourself in a prison of your own beliefs. People like Hanuman don't build any wall around themselves. They are completely flexible and they will do anything that is needed. They will take any role that is needed and they will do any action that is needed. Hanuman, when he was told to become a servant of Sugriv, he quietly became a servant of Sugriv. Hanuman, when he was told to guide Sugriv, he quietly guided Sugriv. Hanuman, at a later point in the Ramayana, we find Sugriv goes aside and Hanuman is a hero, you know. That's also, he has no problem. So Hanuman is ready to do any role which is needed at that point of time. He has no problems with what role he has to do. And therefore, people like Hanuman focus on the service and they don't focus on the role they are doing to perform the service. Like Hanumanji is the avatar of Lord Shiva. And when Lord Shiva was considering that he wants to participate in Ram Leela, he was thinking, how should I participate? In what role should I participate in Ram Leela? And that's when he decided to become a monkey. The reason Lord Shiva decided to become a monkey was because Lord Shiva was thinking, Ram is appearing as a human being. So, to become a servant of Ram, if I become another human being, he will be very uncomfortable, you know, having another, you know, a servant who is another human being. But if I become a monkey, if I become an animal, Ram has no problem, you know, in monkey serving me, you know. So Ram will not, will accept me much easily. Therefore, Lord Shiva took the role of a monkey, so that he can be available to Lord Ram in the way Ram wants him to serve. Which means, from the day one, Hanumanji came very clearly with one desire. Serve Ram in any capacity, any role, any form, any size, any position. And that's what Hanumanji did throughout the Ramayana. There's a very interesting story about this aspect of Hanumanji's personality. Much later, towards the end of the Ramayana, where Ram was once very exhausted and he was resting in a garden. And naturally, Ram was taking rest. Everybody felt that Hanumanji will go and start pressing his feet, you know. So Ram is tired, massage his feet like that. Hanumanji did not get up only. He was standing in one side, just not doing anything. So Bharat, he put a cloth for Hanumanji, for Lord Ram to lie, and he put Ram on that cloth. Still Hanumanji doesn't get up only. Then Lakshman and Shatrughna took one leg of Lord Ram and they started pressing Ram's feet. Still Hanumanji was not moving only. And Bharat, he realized that Hanuman is not doing anything, so he went and put Ram's head on his lap. So now Ram was relaxing and everyone was serving Lord Ram and Hanuman was not doing anything. This is very uncharacteristic of Hanuman, you know, that everybody is doing seva and Hanuman is doing nothing, you know. I mean, of course, in our case, that is what we do all the time, you know. Everybody does seva, I eat meva, you know, that's very characteristic of us. Hanumanji started doing something very interesting after that. He took a fan and he started fanning. Hanumanji was thinking, if I press Ram's feet, I will only be serving him. But by fanning, I am serving all four of them. So that was Hanumanji's mood of, you know, seva, the whole mood of what service really means. So in this context, Hanumanji enters into the cave with all the monkeys following Hanuman. And when they meet this lady, mystic lady called Swayam Prabha inside that cave. And when they are inside the cave, this lady tells them, so they are asking for Mother Sita, they are asking how to find Sita. This lady tells them, close your eyes. Now, when you want to find somebody, you look with eyes open. This lady is telling them, close your eyes. Now, how do you find someone with your eyes closed? This closing of the eyes is a very important thing in the Ramayana. Generally, in today's world, it is highly recommended to keep your eyes open. Because anything can go wrong. You know, padam padam vipadam natesham, Bhagavatam also says, you know. But in the Ramayana, to find something valuable, you have to close your eyes. What does closing of the eyes actually represent? So when you work hard, you keep eyes open. And after when you are exhausted and tired, you close your eyes and go to sleep, you know. So it is impossible to keep your eyes open at night. I mean, unless you are addicted to WhatsApp and mobile, and then you all night keep your eyes open, basically, you know. But otherwise, if you have worked all day long and exhausted, then you tend to close your eyes in the night. So in life, there has to be both the things. There has to be purushartha, or using your intelligence and working very hard. And there has to be vishwas, sleep, close your eyes, basically. So, closing the eyes is very important for all paths of spiritual life. Whether it is the path of karma, whether it is the path of jnana, whether it is the path of bhakti. In bhakti, closing an eyes means faith. If you study Krishna Leela, where the boys, the cows were in this forest fire, and Krishna, he told all of them also, close your eyes. Interestingly, in the Ramayana also same thing. The Swayam Prabha is telling all these monkeys, in the most dangerous time of their life, close your eyes. So if you don't have faith in the fellow who is telling you, close your eyes, you will have 10 questions to ask. in the middle of fire of temptation, it tells you close your eyes. Which fool will close his eyes? You know? Nobody will close his eyes. They could have said, "Arey, malum hai ki aap kya kar rahe ho? Guarantee, are you giving guarantee that if you close our eyes, you will save us? You know, what if this tree falls down? Look at that tree." People could have gone on and on. But the boys, when the moment Krishna tells them close their eyes, all of them say only one thing. All right. If you read that section of the Bhagavatam, that word "all right" is such a deep word. In fact, that one word has the essence of all the scriptures in it. Krishna is telling them close your eyes. The only thing all of them are saying is "all right." That's it. That's what makes them Vrajavasis. That's what makes them the Nitya Sakas of Lord Krishna. That faith that they have. So essentially, when you use your intelligence, the best way to use your intelligence in such a situation of life is to trust God. Have faith in God. And when all the monkeys, they close their eyes, in one moment, they were transported from the cave all the way out, straight to the shore of the ocean. So when they were transported to the shore of the ocean, it's not that Swayam Prabha solved their problem. She took them out from one problem and she put them in another problem. Now there was an ocean in front of them. How do you cross the ocean? So inside that cave, they found sweet water. Inside the cave, Swayam Prabha fed them sumptuous amount of food, nectar. But you can't live inside the cave forever. And outside the cave, there is salty water. Such a huge ocean to cross. This is what life is. When you are on the path of devotion, you will find sweet things and you will find salty things. When you are finding Bhakti Devi, when you are on the path of finding devotion, finding Mother Sita, you will find both the things. You will find bhakti, you will find sweetness, many nice things happening, kirtans, mahaprasad, and you know, all the exciting things happening, festivals and yatras. And then you will also find bitter, salty oceans. One ocean is 16 rounds every day, is a big ocean to cross, you know. Srimad Bhagavatam 12 cantos is a big ocean to cross, you know. For some people, it takes them a lifetime to cross 3-4 cantos practically, you know. So all these are oceans that you find, and they're all salty oceans. That means it's not palatable to you. You can't handle it. You know, I mean, it's not. Who can drink salt water for a long period of time? So the monkeys were very joyful in the beginning. Then they became disappointed in the middle, and they became joyful later, and again they became disappointed now. So at this point of time, they were all discussing who is going to do it. How do we cross this ocean now? So in the Ramayana, there are three types of people that you find, specifically in this section, you know. The monkeys, amongst the monkey army and Sampati here, there are three types of peoples. The first type of people are called as Bhutavadis. That means they are focusing on the future. Bhut is what? Past, right? They're focusing on the past. I'm sorry. And then there are Bhavishyavadis who are focusing on the future. And then there are Vartamanvadis who are focusing on the present. So in the monkey army, you find three types of people. Those who focus on the past, those who focus on the future, and those who focus on the present. So in the monkey army, we find the three people are giving comments about who can do it. So the present, those who are focusing on the present, the Vartamanvadis, they say that we don't have a capacity to cross the ocean. Very difficult. Sampati, So he said, I have heard from all the sages. He had his own guru, you know. His name was Nishkar Muni. So he said, my guru told me, among the entire monkey army, there is only one person who can cross the ocean. It is definitely not me. So most of the monkeys are in that category. So everybody, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, he said, there is one person who will, among my disciples, who will do it. Everybody said it's not me, you know. So most people are convinced it's not me. There is one person who will do it, but it's not me. Sampati and most of the Vartamanvadis who are very, very practical, they said that. Then there were Bhutavadis who were talking about the past, like Jambavan. Jambavan said, in my past I could have done it easily, you know. So there are some people who will only talk about past glories. मेरे जवानी के दिनों में ये करता था, है ना, हमारे जवानी में ये यात्रा होता था, है ना, 15 ही लोग थे, है ना. सो दिस लाइक टॉकिंग अबाउट द पास्ट. देन देयर आर सम पीपल हु टॉक अबाउट द फ्यूचर, है ना. सो दे से लाइक अंगद, ही वॉज अ भविष्यवादी, ही सेड आई कैन श्योरली जंप ओवर देयर टू लंका बट आई कांट कम बैक. Why he said I can't come back? Of course he was talking about ability, but he was also talking about temptation. Lanka is a very tempting place. Udhar kood gaya to guarantee nahi wapas aaunga main. So main bhakti dhoondne ke liye ja raha hu lekin udhar phas jaunga. I will get caught up in the Lanka mood mindset. Udhar party chal raha hai to kya hoga? I will start dancing over there. So there are many people who are in that mood, you know. I get scared of the future. So right now I'm secure, right now I'm safe, I'm in association of devotees. Risk leke jump marunga, udhar pahunch gaye, wapas nahi aaya to kya hoga, you know. So Angad was in that mood. So now some people are fearful of the past, some people are fearful of the present, and some people are fearful of the future. So everyone is simply running around time factor. Everyone is simply running around the past, present and future, and they forget to focus on the katha. On the leela, on the pastime that is going on. The only person that really understood the essence of the whole katha was Hanumanji, of course. But every monkey other than Hanuman was focusing on his own ability. Jamavana saying, I could have done it in the past. Angada saying, I can do it in the future. Sampati and all of us saying, I can't do it in the present. But Hanuman was not focusing on himself at all. That's why he was sitting quietly, not speaking at all, because he was not talking about his ability. And then Jambavan and the others, they started inspiring Hanuman to focus on his achievement, his goal. And then Hanumanji decided that he will attempt. So Hanumanji's attempt to trying to find Mother Sita was completely not focused on the fact that he has any ability. Do not focus on the fact that he is great. Is not focus on the fact that he can do it very easily. Not focus on the fact that I will not get caught by those temptations in Lanka. Focus on the fact that I have a service to Lord Ram, and the ring that I have in my hand, that ring which represents Lord's mercy, which represents Lord's empowerment, this ring will take me there. And that was the only thing Hanumanji completely focused on when he took this whole jump. And that is the speciality of somebody who focuses on the process of bhakti. So Hanuman, his whole strategy was to focus on this aspect of trying to understand what really his role is. And the entire ocean represents something very interesting. The ocean represents the pride in your abilities. Generally, people who have this pride in themselves, their bodily concept, it's called Deha Abhiman. Pride in their connections, pride in their abilities, pride in their strengths. All of them, they can't cross this ocean to find bhakti. The only person who can cross this ocean is somebody who can rise above all these Abhimans, all these. Hanuman didn't dry the ocean up. He flew above the ocean. So that means he tried to rise above these relationships. He tried to rise above this whole pride element in him to find the Bhakti Devi. And therefore, when Hanumanji, he goes to Lanka to find Mother Sita, there are many, many obstacles that came on his path to find Sita. But all the obstacles that came on the path, Hanumanji was not really stuck by these obstacles. In fact, he used his intelligence and he used his devotion to cross all these obstacles very, very easily. And after he crossed all these obstacles very, very easily, he reached where Mother Sita was. And I'll end with a very interesting conversation between Hanumanji and Mother Sita, which really shows the mood of Hanumanji. Hanumanji, when he reached Mother Sita, he saw that Sita was already in a very disturbed mood. And Ravan, he had just come and pressurized her like anything. He had given her a deadline and he told her, if you don't submit, then I'll eat you for breakfast. I actually told her that. Eat her up. You know. Can you imagine what kind of love this is? If you don't marry me, I will eat you up. You know. He was not talking in allegorical. He was actually saying it. He could have actually eaten her up for breakfast. You know. So, Sita was very highly disturbed and she was actually on the verge of committing suicide. Again, in the Ramayana, there are many people who try to attempt suicide. So if you think that suicide is a present day syndrome, it is a Ramayana day syndrome also, you know. In fact, there are three times suicide attempts happened in the Ramayana. And all the three suicide attempts, the solution was same. When we talk about need of counselors, need of psychiatrists today, you know, here Ramayana presents a very interesting psychiatric solution to suicidal tendencies, you know. So when Mother Sita was thinking of committing suicide, Hanumanji was thinking, how do I save her? Hanumanji took a very tiny form and started reciting Ramayana, started reciting Ramkatha from the beginning, you know. And as she was hearing Ramkatha, Sita started developing hope, started developing faith that somebody is there to help me now. The monkeys, when they were on the ocean, they were very disturbed and they didn't know what to do. They all decided they'll fast to death. And they were all on the verge of committing suicide. At that time they said, anyway we are fasting, anyway we are going to die, might as well discuss Ramkatha and die. And they started discussing Ramayana, and that's how they spoke the word Jatayu, and Jatayu's brother Sampati heard them, and Sampati helped them. And they got saved again by Ramayana. And later on at the end of the Ramayana, when Ram is supposed to return to Ayodhya, and he delays, he's not able to come back exactly on time, and Bharat is going to commit suicide. There's a huge fire lit and Bharat is just going to jump. That time Hanumanji reaches there. Hanumanji again starts reciting the Ramayana. So anytime you have suicidal tendencies, try reciting Ramayana before. You know. My piece of advice. Maybe you will change your mind. So here was Mother Sita, who was actually thinking of committing suicide. She hung her hair around her neck and actually going to let off. That time Hanumanji reached on top of that branch of the tree. And Hanumanji, he was telling Mother Sita, so he was thinking, how do I help her? So, generally monkeys, when they are highly excited, they don't think. I don't know if you have ever seen a monkey that thinks, you know. And that too, an excited monkey that thinks, you know. Here is Hanumanji, can you imagine the excitement level of Hanuman? There are millions of monkeys that are searching for Sita across the world. And Hanuman is the one that has actually found her. You can imagine the level of excitement of Hanumanji. And he is so excited that he has found her. But in spite of being so excited, he is still stable, sober, to think what I should do. He was thinking, if I jump in front of Sita right now to save her, she might actually let go of the thing and she would actually die faster because she would think that Ravana has come disguised as a monkey, you know. Or monkeys are not really good looking as such, you know. So out of fear also she might die, you know. So Hanumanji said, I can't do that. So that's why he started reciting Ramkatha. So in spite of the excitement, he was sensitive. That's Hanumanji. And Hanumanji, as he was reciting Ramkatha, he was sitting in a very tiny form. He was hiding behind a leaf and reciting Ramkatha. And Sita, she could hear the Ramayana. She was able to really connect with the voice, with the voice of Hanuman. And as she was hearing the Ramayana, she was really getting touched by the whole mood in which the Ramayana was being recited. And she started looking out for who the speaker is. This is the mood of somebody who recites Ramkatha or Krishna Katha. They should keep themselves hidden and focus should be on Ram and Krishna. Unfortunately, speakers today, they hide Ram and Krishna and they focus on themselves basically. You know. So Hanumanji was hiding himself behind a leaf and he was actually focusing, allowing Sita to focus on Ramkatha. You know. And the result of that kind of narration was that Sita was interested in who the speaker is. And then Hanumanji jumped down. So we can imagine the kind of mood with which Hanumanji was living his life and practicing his devotion. And when Hanumanji jumped down, Hanumanji was in a very tiny form. And in this tiny form, he told Mother Sita that I have come from Lord Ram, a messenger of Ram. I will take you back to Ram. Sita started laughing. You are so tiny, what do you take me back to Ram? You know? She asked him a very subtle question. She asked him, are all the monkeys in Ram's army your size only? You know? Bula sab Lilliput ke saath kya karne wale Ram? Lanka demons are so powerful and big. You know? So Hanumanji realized that she's just looking and deciding. So he showed his huge form. Now Sita got confused. So Sita asked him a question. She asked him, "You are sometimes small, sometimes big. What is your original size?" You know. I mean, if you go to buy a shoe and every day your size changes of your leg, you know, what shoe you can buy? You know? So Hanumanji told her, very interesting answer, which actually shows the mood of Hanumanji with the devotion with which he was living his life. He told her, "Well, my dear mother, my size is actually very small. I'm originally small. But for the seva of Ram, I can take any size." This is humility. Generally, devotees have a wrong understanding of what humility is. Most devotees think humility means I am useless, lower than worm and stool, I can't do anything. And they actually end up doing nothing. Under the garb of humility. Thinking that I am humble. But this is Hanumanji's humility. Hanumanji is convinced that originally I am a small person. I am an insignificant person. But for the service of Ram, I can take any size. Which means, it's not that he is artificially showing that he is humble. He is actually convinced that he is small. But in reality, in action, for the service of Ram, he can take any role and any size. And that's what true humility really means. Sita was really impressed with Hanumanji's nature and Hanumanji's qualities. And because of that kind of impression that Hanuman put on Mother Sita, he really touched her heart. In fact, the reason Hanumanji took that small size when he appeared in front of Sita first was because this was a very calculated move. Hanumanji wanted to hear the word son from Mother Sita. He wanted to hear her calling him beta, you know, son, basically. Why? He had a very motherly connection with Mother Sita. So if Hanumanji became big and calm, so she, you know, you can't, mother won't call somebody so big as son, right? So he took a very small form, and it naturally brought out the motherly love of Mother Sita, which really, you know, emerged in her. And that's the mood which Sita retained about Hanumanji all her life. Very motherly, vision of Hanuman. And that's the mood in which a devotee approaches Bhakti Devi. In a very humble mood. That's why when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the word Hara represents mother, which is the internal energy of the Lord. You know, Mother Hara, Prabhupada would always translate the word as, which represents Bhakti Devi, which represents Mother Sita. So, the Ramayana has a lot of symbolism. We can go on and on speaking about practically every aspect of the Ramayana in the same way, symbolically. But within that symbolism, there is a lot of depth and there is a lot of understanding of the inner elements of bhakti, devotion, which we are all trying to practice and emulate in our lives. So, when we look at our scriptures from a deeper perspective, the scriptures just open up a door, unlimited understanding of what we can really perceive and learn from in our own lives for a day-to-day basis and also dealing with our need for practicing spiritual lives. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.